My guest at this time is Dr. David Whalen. He is the provost at Hillsdale College in Michigan. He joins me to offer his thoughts on the reaction of college students and college administrations around the country to Donald Trump's surprising win over Hillary Clinton in last Tuesday's presidential election. Since then, we've seen protests not only on campus but in major cities around the country. We've also seen colleges set aside safe spaces and arrange counseling sessions for students overwhelmed by grief due to the outcome of the election. We want to get Dr. Whalen's thoughts on how this is happening, since it's not something we've seen a lot in previous generations. And we also want to get a contrast of how it's being handled on the Hillsdale campus. And Dr. Whalen, thanks very much for being with us.
I'm very glad to be here.
I should probably point out ahead of time, in full disclosure, that I'm a Hillsdale College alum, so I know the school well. Dr. Whalen, we've obviously seen conduct on college campuses be an issue well before Election Day. We saw it at Yale. We saw it at the University of Missouri last year with demands from groups from Black Lives Matter to all sorts of others, and the administration in most cases giving in to those demands, even trying to rename buildings that had been previously named for folks from the Confederacy or some other part of our history where the students do not feel like it's appropriate for that person to have a building named after them anymore. How did we get to this point where the students are being able to do this and the administration is essentially catering to them?
That's an excellent question. I wish I had a complete explanation that I could offer in 15 seconds, but let's just put it this way. This I think what we're seeing both last year and now after the election, these are really the predictable consequences of an entirely politicized environment in higher education. For a long, long time now, higher education has been very, very political. It's kind of forsaken its original purpose to foster a kind of keen-sighted intellectual awareness on the part of students and instead indoctrinate them politically. And this is what you get. You get what really can only be described as a kind of infantilized student body. Now, this is true of not everyone, of course, and perhaps not even of most students, but enough to make quite a mark on campuses nationwide.
Why do you think administrators feel pressured to acknowledge, treat the demands as worthy of action on their part?
There are two or three reasons. First of all, administrators are often politically quite sympathetic with the students making the demands. They kind of wish they could move as quickly as the students are urging them to move. So they're sympathetic. The second reason is that they themselves, in too many cases, I should say, lack the moral and intellectual resources to respond to the students or at least respond coherently. And then I think the third reason, Greg, would be that the administrators are, as a rule, very concerned with appearances, too concerned, I should say, with appearances, and not sufficiently concerned enough. And I speak as one. I'm sensitive to appearances, too, but not sufficiently concerned with the moral and intellectual formation of the students, of the intemperate person making the demands. They're too worried about publicity, and so they often take a low but easy road out.
What advice would you give to an administrator who feels that they should not be accommodating these things but feels the pressure that you spoke about to give in?
Right. That's a lot of advice, of course, depends on very particular circumstances. But I guess what I would say is the first thing to remember, the first thing to recall is that if a student is behaving in this way, if the student is in your face shouting, bellowing demands, you have failed that student in some fundamental way. And the most important thing at this moment is not publicity, but what you can do to restore the student to a receptive educational context. In other words, that sounds very high-minded perhaps, but really I think the advice I would give is remember you're a pedagogue, you're a teacher, that's a student. The student needs you. The student needs to be informed by you in some significant respect. Don't forget that's your primary role.
What is the impact on society when students with this mindset and who are getting their demands met on these campuses, what happens when they reach society as graduates?
Well, I'm afraid it's the same thing that happens when you give in to a two-year-old's demands repeatedly and then they hit adolescence. You get somebody who's completely incapable of governing himself.
What about younger education? A lot of people, particularly on the right, who have been watching this in the past week have talked about the participation trophy culture, that regardless of the level of achievement, the effort or the fact that you showed up is rewarded in some way. How do you think that feeds in, if at all, to what we're seeing?
That's an interesting question. It probably does feed in a little bit. I think we should beware of false oppositions. That is, the reward everybody culture is kind of silly. But then the opposite extreme, you know, everybody gets a kick in the head except the one victor who just gets a milder tap on the brow. That's kind of ludicrous as well. But of course, we don't have that problem. We have the first one. I think what you do is you have very clear, delineated hierarchies of achievement, and you reward success without damning or condemning failure. There are I was at a sports banquet just last night, and the people who didn't play so well nevertheless were members of a team and enthusiastic, and it was not the kind of thing where everyone's getting a gold star. So there are ways to sponsor cultivate and nurture great high morale without deeming everyone a winner. That's a silliness that in the end is poisonous, and I think you're probably right. It probably plays into this a bit too.
We're talking with Dr. David Whalen. He's the provost at Hillsdale College in Michigan. And sir, for those who know a little bit about Hillsdale, one of the things that usually comes up pretty early in the conversation is that Hillsdale has never taken a federal aid in any way. In fact, they even lost a Supreme Court case, so you don't even take federal student loan money. So there's a little bit more of a conservative culture on your campus, to say the least. What is Hillsdale's approach to building up young people to approach situations like this so you don't see on your own campus what we're seeing on some of these others?
Right. Two things. First, the students here understand that they are their partners, their colleagues in an enterprise. They are not consumers who are unhappy with the product that they're buying. They are in a they're undergoing a formation that they have to contribute to willingly. So they're just plugged in. They've bought in. You know, they're engaged. The second thing is that we educate them in the Western intellectual tradition, which is a tradition of massive argument, disagreement, and debate. So you know, we're not inculcating or we're not indoctrinating people with conservative stuff. We're just presenting this in this tradition that has arguments about everything from economics and the relation of the state to the individual and the existence of God and the nature of evil and blah, 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 everything imaginable. When you encounter that, when you wrap your mind at difficulty, under pressure and in strain around the most serious arguments about the most serious things, funny, but you turn into a pretty intellectually adept, responsible, mature person.
There is vigorous intellectual debate at Hillsdale, and I had an intern this summer, Dr. Whalen, who talked about how intense the debate was about the Republican primary earlier this year. Mm-hmm. What did you observe then about how students in particular were engaging in that debate?
Well, most of them engaged with pike staffs and pitchforks, but I am joking, of course. The debates were vigorous but civil. The students didn't, at least in the vast majority of cases, there weren't, you know, breakings up of friendships and shoutings down dormitory hallways. You know, there was a lot of very vigorous, very serious disagreement, but it was conducted. With civility, respect, and people didn't assume that someone with a different point of view was morally deficient.
Consider this last question, my virtual alumni donation for the month. what do you think it is about Hillsdale College that, and you've talked about it in a previous response, do you think what you see at Hillsdale is unique? Do you think that exists on a lot more campuses and we just don't hear about it because these other scenarios get a lot more media attention? Or do you think you're an eyewitness to something pretty unique right now in higher education?
Right. I would say a little bit of all of the above. That is, I do think Hillsdale is unique. The specificity and the intensity with which we pursue our original and founding mission is very, very rare in higher learning. But it's also the case that there is a lot of good work being done by a lot of people, and it's quiet. You don't hear about it much. All over the country, there are many excellent professors working with students who are really eager to learn important and serious things. But it's not glamorous. It doesn't make the evening news, and it doesn't attract a lot of attention. So I do think that's the case. But at Hillsdale, to use the current terms, we're very intentional about all that. And so we are also, I think, unique.
Certainly an amazing time to watch what's going on in this country, and particularly on the college campuses. Dr. Whalen, always good to talk to you, sir. Thanks for your time today.
Great to talk to you again, Greg.
Dr. David Whalen is provost at Hillsdale College in Michigan. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.